Well, it wouldn't be Christmas without a little invitation from our dear friend Lionel Fenthorpe, live from the United Kingdom. And we're going to play a little ditty with Lionel in just a second. Lionel, my friend, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you and all our listeners and all the team, George. It's great to be on the air with you.
Always a pleasure. What is your most memorable Christmas, Lionel?
Well, I think probably the first Christmas that Patricia and I had together, which is exactly 50 years ago, because we married in 57. And we married in the September, and that first Christmas with the girl you love in your arms as your wife instead of just your fiancé is absolutely wonderful. And that's, I think, the one that's got to be the great scorer. But we've had so many wonderful Christmases since, and I would say that they've all been good.
What's it like to celebrate Christmas out there in the United Kingdom?
Well, we're having a marvelous time here. We're going over to stay with our daughter for the day. She's just across the other side of the city, and the other daughter and her husband and the grandchildren all coming down. We're going to have a real family party, about 12 of us sitting down. We got the turkeys ready yesterday, and we took them up all ready to go in the oven, so hopefully she'll be putting them on in a few minutes.
All right, well, we're going to play a little special you've given us, Lionel. I want to thank you. Have a wonderful holiday, and we'll talk to you in the new year.
Thank you very much, George. I'd love to hear the special I did for you. And may I just say, it was such a pleasure to be asked. I'm honored.
We're going to put you on hold so you can indeed hear 'Twas the Night Before Christmas.
'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap when, out on the lawn, there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. When, what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and eight tiny reindeer. With a little old driver, so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away, all! As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky, so up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled! His dimples, how merry! His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger side of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good."
Guests for you this hour. Was there a conspiracy to steal and destroy the real life of Jesus? There could be evidence here to prove this. You know, this celebration, Christmas, the birth of Jesus. Michael Gear received his master's degree in anthropology from Colorado State University. He went on to work as an archaeologist for Western Wyoming College in 1978. He has worked as a professional archaeologist now for 29 years. And started writing full-time in 85. Kathleen Gear received her master's degree, summa cum laude, from California State University in Chico and studied biblical history and archaeology at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem in Israel. She was working on her Ph.D. in American Indian history at UCLA when she came to Wyoming in 1980 to serve as the Wyoming State Historian and later archaeologist for the United States Department of the Interior. Michael and Kathleen have more than 200 nonfiction publications in the fields of archaeology, history, and publishing, and they are our special guests this hour on Coast to Coast. Hello, you two. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you, George.
Hey, it's good to be back. How you been?
Good, Michael. It's good to have you again, too. Tell me a little bit about this conspiracy about Jesus.
Yeah, this actually starts, George, right after Jesus dies. And the best information we have suggests that he was crucified on what today we would call April 7th of the year 30. And immediately after that, there started to be disagreements among the apostles and Paul as to what he actually taught and what the details of his life were. And, I mean, New Testament readers are familiar with this already from Paul's letter to Galatians, where he writes that Galatian Christians were listening to those who would pervert the gospel of Christ and that they believed in a different gospel. And there was a major controversy between Jesus' brother James, who was the leader of the church in Jerusalem, and Paul over what Jesus' teachings were. But the real conspiracy to suppress the facts of his life begins at the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD.
Right.
And this is the council where the church wanted to standardize the text that would constitute the New Testament and also to create the official doctrines of the New Testament. And immediately after the 27 books were chosen, there were hundreds of Gospels at the time, George. And these were cast out. Only 27 books were accepted. And immediately after that, Constantine made it a crime to possess any of the other teachings about Jesus' life. He ordered that those other Gospels be hunted out and destroyed. A few years later, he made it a capital offense of treason, which was punishable by execution, if you possessed any of the books that talked about Jesus' life. And we're talking about some really controversial elements of Jesus' life here. For example, did he have a father? Did anyone know the name of his father? Was the resurrection a bodily resurrection, a spiritual resurrection? What happened to his body? After it was placed in the tomb by Joseph of Arimathea, there were a lot of different stories circulating in early Christian history, and the Council of Nicaea wanted to suppress anything but their official version of the story.
And the official version was what?
The official version was that there was a virginal conception, that he was born in Bethlehem. Later on, they would say that Mary was a perpetual virgin, which eliminated the fact that he had any brothers or sisters.
Right.
That he resurrected bodily after the crucifixion. You know, critical things that Christians today consider to be the foundations of their faith. And at the time when all of this was happening, of course, there was a big controversy about that. You know, and we see a lot of this, too, in the New Testament. The New Testament Gospels don't agree on exactly what happened during the time period either.
Are you saying that what we've been taught over all these years has been shattered by some of this evidence that you have?
Oh, absolutely. Keep in mind that what we have is the official version of the myth. And to kind of put this into a little bit of perspective, in the the 200 years after Jesus died, you know, we always think of Christianity as being kind of this uniform, monoblock religion. You know, we've got the story, we know the official myth. But here's something I'd like you to consider. Before the interview, I put together a list of all of the different Christianities that existed before Nicaea. Okay? You ready for this?
Go ahead.
Okay. We've got the Ebionites, the Marcionites, the Paulists. Then we get into a whole bunch of people collectively known as the Gnostics. And we've got Marcosians, Valentinians, Montanists, Theodosians, and then we've got two really good, fun Christian bunches, one called the Fabianites and the other one called the Carpocratians, yeah. Carpocrates is the guy in charge of it. Now, these guys are fun Christians, George. What they're into is they like lots of feasting, lots of sex, and lots of partying. And you also have this other group that a lot of people call the Proto-Orthodox. And these are the guys that are eventually going to win all of this thing at Nicaea. And so, I mean, just look at the number of different groups, and a lot of them we don't even know what their names were.
Is there any argument in terms of the authenticity that one Jesus existed?
No, there's no question about that. He definitely existed. And we know that he was executed by Rome, probably by crucifixion, although not necessarily. There are documents which also say that he was stoned and say that he was hung, although hung was sometimes used to represent crucifixion. But he was definitely existed, and he was condemned to death by Rome.
Do we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that he was a holy man, that he tried to do good? Would everybody agree with that?
Yes, within certain limits.
Unless you're Roman.
Yeah.
Unless you're Roman, right?
Yeah, and here's the thing about Jesus. We have the image of him today as being the peacemaker, but Jesus sincerely believed that the end of the world was at hand, that they were going to see, you know, the end of history, the rolling up of history within his lifetime. And
he could be on the George Nuri Show.
I would have liked that interview.
And because of that, I mean, George, think about when he throws the money changers out of the temple. We know from New Testament documents that Roman soldiers were killed in the riot that erupted after that. Barabbas was probably one of the people who committed the murders at that time.
And not just a petty thief either. Barabbas is a political prisoner.
Yeah. But this image of Jesus as being totally the peacemaker is probably not quite accurate, although he certainly did preach, you know, love and peace in general.
Okay, now the conflict then is, what happened after he died, some of the incredible things he did during his life, are they made up or are they real?
Yes.
let me go back to this bunch, this Ebionites that I mentioned earlier.
All right.
Okay, these are the apostles who follow directly in Jesus' legacy. The New Testament, modern Christianity, is pretty much Paulist. I mean, Paul created the Christianity that we have today. But keep in mind, Paul never met Jesus except in a vision. And who the Ebionites were is they were the church in Jerusalem, which was being run by Jesus' younger brother, James, and most of the other apostles. And what you have to understand is that as Paul goes around and starts setting up all of these churches, he's saying, yeah, if you're Gentile, you can believe in Jesus. You do not have to keep the laws. And he probably gets into a real upscuttle with Brother James and the Jerusalem church.
Mm-hmm.
James is saying, hey, wait a minute, pal. This is my brother. you saw him in a vision on the road, and I lived with him my entire life. Who are you to pervert his teachings? The Ebionites believed that Jesus was a man, that he was born, you know, there was no virgin birth, and there was no resurrection.
And it isn't just the Ebionites who believe this. All the way through the history of early Christianity, George, you have this controversy going on. I mean, you know, just as an example, in 450 A.D., this is how long this whole controversy lasts. There's a bishop of Cyrus in Syria. His name is Theodoret. And let me just read you a quote. He's writing about the heretic Tatian. And he says, this fellow composed a gospel called By the Four, cutting off the genealogies and such other things as show that our Lord was, as for his body, a descendant of David. Not only the adherents of his party used this gospel, but also those who followed the apostolic teaching. I found more than 200 such books revered in my churches. And, of course, he collected them all and destroyed them. But the whole idea about the genealogies of Jesus that we find in Matthew and Luke was a major point of contention in the early church.
Were these gospels changed at all, altered?
Dramatically.
Oh, boy.
Dramatically.
Yeah, they had editors back then just like they do today.
slash, and slash, huh?
And rewrite, yes.
Depending upon the political and the theological perspective that they're coming from.
Now, you know, Michael, this is pretty controversial. There are people that are probably listening right now saying, you're blaspheming. What are you doing?
Yeah, you know, and we understand that, George. Let me give you an example, though, of the rewritings that occur, just so people can understand this. For example, in many Bibles today, will end the Gospel of Mark at chapter 16, verse 8, because the earliest documents that we have end at 16:7 or 16:8. So there's no clear reference to the resurrection. There are no sightings of Jesus after the resurrection. And one of the major controversies in the early church was when, in Mark's version, Jesus is on the cross, and he says, my God, we translate it as, why have you forsaken me?
Right, right.
We assume that he's quoting there and fulfilling the prophecies in Psalms 22:1. But here's the problem, is that lama sabachthani is not Greek, it's not Hebrew, it's not Aramaic. It's a nonsense term. And what that means is that translators later on who were reading the early manuscripts couldn't translate it as forsaken me, and so they would substitute things for it, so that you'll find one translator shifting it to, you have tested me. Another one, you have given me over to hatred. Another one, you have wished me ill. And still another one, you have left me behind. Because they couldn't translate sabachthani because it wasn't a real word. And so there's a lot of controversies like this. We have about 5,400 existing copies of the Gospels or fragments of the Gospels. And George, in those Gospels, scholars estimate there are 200,000 to 300,000 differences between the Gospels.
Man, so the bottom line to all of this is, he existed?
He did.
He may have done some very supernatural things?
Definitely.
But maybe not as many as we think.
Actually, he was most well-known for his healings and his miracles. So he did do quite a few healings and miracles.
And as a magician.
All right, when we come back, let me ask you the specific question. If you think he truly was the Son of God, the way we've always believed it to be, we'll also open up the phone lines with our two incredible guests, Michael and Kathleen Gear. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Hey, I want to take this opportunity to thank all of you listening on your very favorite radio stations across North America for continuing to support Coast to Coast AM, making us the highest rated overnight program in the continent. Thank you so much. Those of you StreamLink members, thank you. I appreciate everything you have done for us over the years, XM Satellite subscribers as well, and then the various chat rooms. Looking forward to a wonderful new year with you folks at thenighthawkzone.com, NighthawkZone.com, and then the Imaginative Worlds folks, the Fantastic Form Pirates, Into Infinity, Frog Form, MySpace accounts, National Radio Club, and it goes Sorcery IRC. It just goes on and on and on. Thank all of you, for keeping Coast to Coast your favorite program. Back in a moment. Michael, Kathleen Gear with us. We're going to take your phone calls this hour. We've got open lines next hour for you. Michael, I'll ask you first, then you, Kathleen. Do you believe that in the traditional sense that Jesus was indeed the Son of God?
Okay. This is a problem that goes clear back to his life and death. And what happened is the early Christian church split three ways on this. Way number one was that, like we mentioned, the Ebionites, that he was just simply a man,
mm-hmm.
with that ability to touch the divine, a mystic. Way number two was something that that the Gnostics did, and they said that he was all God. That what happened is at the moment of the crucifixion, that God was out of the body of Jesus, looking down at it because it had been freed. And then, of course, you've got other people who said that, and these are what the Romans called the adoptionists, and they're people like the Theodosians, who said that he was born human, but at the moment of his baptism, that God showed up and said, "Yeah, you are my chosen." And so, in essence, God adopted him.
Okay.
So these are the major splits that you have, and the way that the proto-Orthodox, the Christian Church as we know it today, came to any kind of a synthesis of all of this is they adopted all three ideas, which is where the birth of the notion of the Trinity comes from.
That's interesting. And Kathleen, obviously you agree with this.
Yes, but I have another statement to make on that issue, though, George, because there are many places in the Old Testament and the New Testament where we are all spoken of as being the sons and daughters of God. And I think it's the sixth chapter of 2 Corinthians where God says, if you abide by my rules, you will become, you know, my son or my daughter. And I think in the general tradition of the Old Testament and the New Testament as it was originally written, that Son of God, that anyone could be the son or the daughter of God. And I do think that as later Christianity develops and Jesus, the divinity of Jesus, becomes doctrine, the concept of the Son of God obviously changes and is applied only to Jesus. But Jesus's teachings, I think, certainly show the way and provide a course for salvation.
So you believe he was a special person, no doubt.
Absolutely he was. I think his teachings are some of the most brilliant teachings in the history of the world's religions.
And do you believe that he resurrected from the dead?
I do, but I think it was a spiritual resurrection, not a bodily resurrection.
Spiritual, something that we will all do when we attain death.
Right.
And I think that he was buried with a real good chance that he was buried at the Talpiot tomb, and that again, the resurrection would be spiritual.
Go ahead, Kathleen.
George, do you know, there is a place known as the gravesite of Yeshua HaNotzri, which is Jesus the Nazarene, but it's in Galilee. And do you remember at the end of the Gospel of Mark, in 16:8, where he says to the women who come to the tomb with the spices and the oils, he says to the man standing in white,
right,
says
right.
to them...
At the door, at the
right,
gate hole, yeah.
Right, says to them, he has gone on to Galilee as he told you he would. Well, there is a grave in Galilee near Safed that is marked as the grave of Yeshua HaNotzri. And in the 16th century, the Kabbalistic rabbi, Luria, listed his grave as one of the graves of the righteous. So, I mean, almost no one visits this grave. No one knows where it is, but it does exist.
And nobody knows. Talpiot tomb.
And nobody knows where it is. That means the bones could be there.
Well, people know where it is, but no one has ever excavated it, and I suspect you will not get a permit to do that either, George.
Especially after the Talpiot tomb.
Yeah. All right, let's go to some of the phones. We'll get everybody's views on this. East of the Rockies, go ahead, please.
Yes, hello. Is this George?
Hi. Yes, sir.
George, I want to say to your coast-to-coast listeners out there, may all of your souls cradle the Christ quality of divine love, and may peace of the Sacred Heart of Jesus Christ dwell in every heart listening tonight. George, this is Suleiman Edmondson. I'm in New York visiting
Psychic
my son.
Suleiman. What do you, all right, well, enjoy your holiday.
Thank you. I want to say to you this, George, and to your listeners, and I want to give them hope. The two individuals that are speaking are not telling the truth. I had a visitation from the Sacred Heart of Jesus Christ in 1990. It took me several years for that preparation. He is the true Son of God. And last night on the Raleigh show, she had a near-death experience individual by the name of Stout, Elaine Stout. And every
yes.
story that she told last night, where near-death experiences were initiated by children and adults, most of those met the Son of God. And I'm telling you this, and I want your listeners to know this so that they can fill their spirits and their souls with heart tonight. The Sacred Heart of Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And I'm going to tell you this. When he was on the cross and he was sacrificing his life for us, he did not say, Father, Father, why have thou forsaken me? What he said was, Father, Father, why have they forsaken me? And when he said that, he was praying for all the souls on the planet, the past, present, and the future, and he was being rebuked, and he was being mocked by 1,008 Roman and citizens from Jerusalem at the foot of the cross, and he was sacrificing his life for our salvation and redemption. George, I'm telling you, the Son of God exists. It's the Sacred Heart of Jesus Christ, and those individuals that you have on the air now, they are blasphemers and they are deceivers.
All right, let's get their takes. Let's get their takes. Are you blasphemers, Michael and Kathleen?
I certainly hope not, since I consider myself to be a believer. Here's the problem, though, George, is that there are people out there who believe that knowledge and history destroy faith, and we do not. As a matter of fact, we think that historical knowledge about Jesus can restore the profound meaning of his life that has been taken by centuries of revisionism. But, George, there's no arguing with personal experience, and I am very happy for him that he's had that kind of personal experience.
Well, and what I have heard from both of you isn't too far off the mark here from what he was saying.
Well, yeah, I don't think so. What you always have to consider is that if you are a true scholar, you have to follow the information where it will take you. And a lot of this scholarship kicked off, well, originally in the Enlightenment, but the really big guy in this that broke it all over open was a German scholar by the name of Walter Bauer, who actually started going around looking at the remaining documents that we had, and then, of course, you had the Qumran documents, commonly called the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Nag Hammadi documents, and people began really looking in old monasteries and looking at the archaeological information and piecing together other source material from Jewish as well as Roman records. And what they found is there are a lot of discrepancies.
Next up, let's go west of the Rockies. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello. My name is Johnny, calling from Los Angeles.
Hey, Johnny.
Fine. I apologize, everybody. My question is religion used for deception for the mass of people? And is religion the cause of all the trouble in the world today? I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Which one of you two wants it?
Both are craving to answer this question. Religion can be a deception, and it certainly has been used, Johnny, for the slaughter of millions and is still being used to justify murder around the world. I don't think it has to be, though.
I think that if you listen to the sincere teachings of all the world's great religions, that what they preach is love and peace and a reverence for the world.
Yeah, and keep in mind that we have, religion is part of being human. It's something that has evolved with our brains. It's evolved as part of our cognitive process. People like to talk about like the difference between science and religion. And keep in mind that science is every bit as unnatural for the human condition as religion is natural. What we do is we think basically in a religious sense. It's the intuitive part of how we see the world and how we deal with the world. And you have people, and I mean, God bless the mystics, that have that ability to contact with the spiritual.
Sure.
And on the other hand, you have periods of social unrest and dysfunction when you have large parts of the society that are undergoing some kind of deprivation, either real or perceived. And that's when fundamentalism really gets started, because what it is usually an attempt to go back to generally a mythical past. Like with modern Islam today, you have a lot of people who want to go back to the caliphate in the 7th and 8th centuries. It's just not going to happen. It happens in Native American groups under severe acculturation. They go into nativistic movements, revitalization movements, an attempt to return to the mythical past.
And violence is often a part of it.
Absolutely, because what fundamentalism actually is an attempt to maintain a given social hierarchy and social order within a group.
All right, let's go to the first-time caller line. You're up. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead. And where are you calling from?
Rock Hill, South Carolina.
Oh, okay, sir, go ahead.
Okay, this is Henry. And statement, I think Mrs. Gere said earlier that Mary was a virgin after Jesus was born, which means that probably that Jesus did not have brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
If he did, which I believe probably he did,
Is there
like, since there anyone done any research, like if there's any descendants of his brothers and sisters around?
All right, I'll let you. Any descendants out there, Michael and Kathleen?
No, not that we know of.
We can track.
George, but Henry is probably correct that Jesus did have brothers and sisters, and we know that because in the 4th century, when the perpetual virginity of Mary was established as doctrine, you have church fathers coming along and saying, well, if Mary was perpetually a virgin, then every time in the New Testament where the documents say these are the brothers of Jesus, they really must have been cousins. And the Greek term for brother is adelphos, which is usually applied to Jesus's brothers, like in Mark 6:3. And there's a Greek term for cousins, which is anepsios, and they do not call any of Jesus's brothers anepsios. They all call them adelphos. So, I mean, I think that Henry is right. He did have brothers and sisters, but we don't know of any descendants.
How close is the Da Vinci Code, that story, that book, with some of your research?
Da Vinci Code is problematic in a lot of ways, George. Just as an example, Jesus's marriage to Mary Magdalene, certainly they were very close. There are many documents who talk about Jesus kissing her on the mouth. There are some late documents that talk about her being his consort, but there is not one place in any document where the word wife is used for Mary Magdalene. So it's problematic. He probably was not married.
Probably,
yeah. And there are problems with that, too. One of the reasons it's believed that he was not married was because he could not, under Jewish law, because he didn't have a father.
Yeah, there's a lot of scholarly discussion as to whether or not he was an illegitimate child. You know, and according to Jewish law, that could have happened in a number of ways. The fact that Mary
didn't live with Joseph until after the birth of a child. You know, I mean, there's a lot of Jewish law controversy about how that actually worked. But if he was an illegitimate child, he could not have married. It was against Jewish law.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hey.
I was wondering if your guest had heard of a book, or rather read the book, Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda.
Many years ago, about 30 years ago, I read that. Yes, I liked it very much.
Well, I was just wondering then, you know, how you, because I never heard hear this talked about as much as George has these types of subjects that are discussed on the show and everything. I've never heard anybody bring this issue up. The fact that Yogananda talks about how in the East, in India, there are many what they call God-realized souls that do the same things that Jesus did, including resurrecting themselves, which is in more in terms of a light body. Which,
absolutely.
Which you the person who's dead actually from the astral realm can manifest another body that looks and feels identical to the physical body, but it is kind of like a materialization of light from, you know, the heavens, if you will, or whatever. So I don't know whether you want to expand on that or not, but I would love to see it shared, because I think that it's a unifying unifying body of knowledge that lets us see that there were masters that came. Jesus was probably the highest, if not among the highest. But he was saying to all of us that his encouragement was to do what he did. And why would he, do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And I think this autobiography of a yogi and what Yogananda brought was that here's how you do it, you know. And it's also, it's scientific, it's practical, but I really never hear this talked about, and I've been kind of surprised after 15 years of listening to Coast to Coast. I've heard people, you know, arguing, like kind of the last caller or a couple callers mm-hmm. ago, where, you know, they get real uptight because they're threatened about their, you know, their dogma or whatever they believe in, but they have, it's just because they haven't kind of gone to the next step of, well, here's the science behind what he was teaching. So I don't know whether you might be able to expand on that in a better way than I could, but I think it's worth sharing, you know, that there is a science behind what Jesus was teaching everybody too.
All right, yeah. And I'll let you wrap up. We got 30 seconds left, folks.
Okay, let me just give you a quote from the Gospel of Philip, and I'm going to get this slightly wrong, but
it's got to be a tight quote, too.
Okay, it says, they err who say that first he died and then he arose, for you must find the resurrection while yet you live. And I'm almost certain that they meant an enlightenment.
Possibly. Hey, you too. Thank you. Have a wonderful Christmas.
Thank you, George. You too. Take care now.
I'll be back in just a moment with Pure Open Lines now for the rest of the program. Plus, we're going to end the program with a letter to Michael. I'll be back.